very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon, 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. We're going to talk to Andrew Herman from DNA Info coming up a little bit later in the program about a couple of things, the hotel development at Wrigley Field and some of the things that they're going to put in there. The Ricketts family unveiled that earlier this week. And also the Halal brothers, I guess the Halal, is it the boys or the brothers, opening another restaurant in Chicago. I've not tried it yet. Halal guys, I was 0 for 2. So that's coming up with Andrew Herman a little bit later. In the second half hour, we'll talk to Gregory McBride. He's one of the chief analysts for Bankrate.com about the Fed Board of Governors meeting. They're beginning their 2 days of meetings today. And then sometime tomorrow, just after the show, I think generally about 1:15, we will learn whether or not they will increase interest rates for the month of September. Most people say probably not, but there is an argument among some that that is indeed a possibility. So we'll talk to Gregory McBride about that a little bit later. One of the stories making news today is out of Washington. The CEO of Wells Fargo has been on Capitol Hill before a Senate committee, John Stumpf. You know, they put their employees under great pressure to increase the number of customers. So essentially, customers were creating accounts with the data that they already had from their existing companies. So quite a scandal. And Stumpf was on Capitol Hill defending that. And I know Kim Gordon was monitoring that. And I suppose if you were to expect a firebrand senator to speak up against him, it would have been Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat from Massachusetts. That's kind of what happened, right?
She definitely did not mince words at all.
What did she have to say?
Well, here I have a little bit of an exchange from the beginning I can play for you.
I'm asking if you have fired senior management, the people who actually led community banking division, who oversaw this fraud, or the compliance division that was in charge of making sure that the bank complied with the law.
Carrie Toll said.
Did you fire any of those people? No.
She kind of didn't give him a chance.
No, I don't think. I think she
and she continued to go at him.
You should resign, she said. You should give back the money you took while the scam was going on, and you should be criminally investigated by both the Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission. So we'll see how that plays, but that was Elizabeth Warren talking today at a Senate hearing on what's going on with Wells Fargo. Another story in the news, and this has to do with a Chicago company, Donald Trump Jr. got into a trouble. Actually, it was the campaign. The tweet was released with the campaign sort of signature on it. But he was comparing the Syrian refugee crisis to a bowl of Skittles. And he said, essentially, imagine this bowl of Skittles if only three or four were bad ones, as if the Syrian refugees, three or four among a handful, are bad. Would you eat any of them? And the implication was the answer was no. Okay, that's the hot water politically and stuff. But I loved the response, and I think this is just a perfect response from a business when it comes to sort of crisis or skirting crisis, skittling crisis, if you will. Wrigley America out of Chicago said, Skittles are candy. Refugees are people. We don't feel it's an appropriate analogy. We will respectfully refrain from further commentary, as anything we do, anything further we say, could be misinterpreted as marketing. I think that was put pretty well, and I think that will serve Wrigley pretty well, too. It's at 12:15 here on the Business Lunch. Andrew Herman is in the studio. Andrew, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. Were you outside sunbathing at all today? Beautiful day.
You know, it's one of those kind of things. You wake up and they say it's going to be chilly, and so you wear a sweater to work, and then you go out at lunch, and you're
so
too
you're,
hot.
You're blaming the weatherman
I'm
for
too
your,
hot again, Steve.
It's a very nice sweater vest, I think. I saw Rick Santorum with one of those recently.
I'm known for my sweater vest.
I am, too. I don't know if we should
be proud of that. Not necessarily in a positive
it's not
way.
A good thing. Okay, so before you came in the studio, I was talking about the fact that the Halal brothers or Halal and Sons were expanding, and thank God Michael Heidemann heard me and said the Halal guys.
Halal guys, right.
And they're expanding what, their second Chicago opening?
Yeah, so they're at 172 North Wabash. They opened last Friday. They've already had one at 49 West Division, which they opened last year. And it's the latest in the Middle Eastern food craze that we see downtown here. We have Halal guys. We have
Let me say it. I wanted to say Naf Naf.
Oh.
The Naf Naf Grill?
Yeah.
Is it the grill?
Yeah. Roti. I don't know if you've ever eaten at a roti. It's all delicious roasted stuff on pitas with rice. And
Well, let me tell you, fella, it's not just downtown. It's I was driving I think, down Milwaukee Avenue over the weekend, and there's a Knopf Knopf Grill there now up in Vernon Hills or Vernon Hills, Buffalo Grove around there. Rhodey Grills mm-hmm. over there as well. There's one growing coming up in Deerfield as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a taste sensation that's exploding. It kind of got its start here. It's halal food, which is food that Muslims can eat that's religiously prescribed.
Isn't it amazing sort of contradiction? I really love that.
Yeah, but a lot of young people like to eat halal food, even if they're not Muslim, just because the ingredients of like this sort of pitas and roasted meat and rice. And it's a $20 billion a year industry now, which is up about a third since 2010.
So. And the halal guys, they started as just sort of a food cart, right?
Right, they have an interesting backstory. They were just three guys that had a hot dog cart in New York, and they just weren't making it. And they looked around, and they were Egyptian immigrants themselves, and they knew a lot of cab drivers who were looking for halal lunches. And
right.
So they switched it, and it took off with cab drivers, and then pretty soon office workers liked it, and now they have about 20 across the country, and they're shooting for 300 eventually.
Wow, no kidding.
So they have a big expansion plan. They're franchise places, but they are in California now, in Chicago, New York, Florida, and also they're looking to Canada to expand.
Is there a leader in this sort of genre of food? I mean, are they the leader, or is Rhodey, or is it just sort of organic happening all over?
You know, halal made a lot of news in New York, and New York being obviously the media center, they got a lot of attention. I don't know if there actually is a leader at this point, but having eaten it all three, I'd say they're all great.
Now, is this... I'm going to maybe show my... Is this shawarma as well?
Yeah.
That's the same thing, right?
Right.
And there's been a joint in the Bloomingdale's Mall. Was it Bloomingdale's? Or Nordstrom. Mm. For maybe 5 or 10 years, where you could get that food.
You see, you always saw them sort of independent guys, little small places here and there.
We're going to go up to the newsroom real quick. Kim Gordon.
Steve, just a quick update on Jay Cutler. I know a lot of people have been wondering about his thumb. Coach John Fox says Cutler has a right thumb strain, no surgery for now, and he's not been ruled out for the Dallas game.
Well, that's good. So he'll be back sooner rather than later.
Okay, yeah, not as bad maybe as everybody thought.
Well, good news. I'm glad to hear that. No one wants to see him injured. We're going to take a quick break. We'll check the traffic hotspots. We're talking to Andrew Herman. Openings and closings, he joins us each week from DNA Info. And we're going to go up to the north side in just a minute or two. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG. And a little later in the program, we're going to talk to Shaniqua Davis. She is the CEO and founder of Noirify, which is a startup. They're actually competing for some money next week. There's a competition in Chicago, and they're trying to get money. Their idea is they want to match up qualified minority candidates with tech firms, I think, like Twitter and elsewhere. They've got trouble attracting that talent, so they say. And this app, Noirify, might have the answer to that. So we'll talk to Shaniqua coming up later. Right now, Andrew Herman from DNA Info is in the studio. And all right, let's go to Wrigley Field.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad to hear that there's a new Wintrust bank facility opening just across from Wrigley Field.
Right.
As we sit here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Yeah, well...
is there anything else to it?
Well, this is a hotel owned by the Ricketts family, which owns the Cubs. Also, DNA Info, as long as there's full disclosure here. It's at the northwest corner of Clark and Addison. A pretty big one, 175 rooms, 28,000 square feet, 7 stories tall, opening in early 2018. So they're going to have this hotel right next to Wrigley Field, and it's going to be... looks like it's going to be a great place.
And so this isn't the one where the McDonald's was. This is the one on Clark, just
Where the McDonald's is.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Not the one. There's a building just north of Wrigley.
Right.
North-ish on Clark.
Yeah.
And that's not this one.
No, this is the Hotel Zachary.
Okay. Well, Zachary, and I talked with Bill and Wendy earlier about the namesake for the hotel is pretty cool.
Yeah, so this is named after Zachary Taylor Davis, who was the architect of Weigman Park, which all Cubs fans know was the original name of Wrigley Field. He designed it in 1914, cost $250,000.
To design.
Just to build the whole thing.
You can't get a sign in Wrigley Field for $250,000 now.
Now, he also designed the old Comiskey Park in 1910, and that was the baseball palace of the world. And the special thing about that was this was actually the first time they had built a baseball park designed to last. Before, it was all, you know, they were kind of shoddy construction,
right,
because nobody cared, and it was all wood, but they used steel in there. So this was, he was like at the forefront of making baseball parks that can last, and obviously Wrigley Field has lasted a long time.
He had two of the ones that lasted probably the longest time. I mean, Comiskey Park probably had to have a, when you look at the lifetimes of baseball stadium, had to be pretty up there.
Yeah, now they don't last 25 years. They just replaced them like in Atlanta and Texas. And
it's not good, is it?
Right. This guy, he's had some great work, the Kankakee Courthouse. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Yeah,
have he I ever did seen that, one? That? My birth certificate is in the Kankakee County Courthouse.
Mount Carmel High School, he designed that.
I didn't know that he had that Kankakee link, too.
Yeah, so he died in 1946, but he made a lot of famous buildings around Chicago, and so the Hotel Zachary is going to be named for him.
I like that, because that's not, when you think of Chicago architecture, that's not one of the names I've heard before.
Right, right.
And tell me about what they want this building to do, because they refer to it as being a town hub, which I like that notion, if it's my understanding of it. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to have several very nice restaurants in it, and it it's going to have some meeting space. It's going to, you know, they want to build that plaza there, mm-hmm. The Ricketts family, to sort of make it part of, I don't know, the center of the neighborhood somewhat. Not that Wrigley isn't already, but this is a little bit more inviting to the community.
Sort of exhale and relax a little bit.
Right. I mean, you think about, okay, well, this would be a great ballpark if there's a game, you can go there. But if you live in the area or you have business in the area, there's not a whole lot of places to stay now. And so in that sense, it would be a place, if you're going to be on the near north side doing business or visiting, that you could stay there.
Okay, here's my theory of the season. Have you been to many games this year?
Two.
I think I've been to one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
But I've watched them on TV, and I'm struck by the number of empty seats at Wrigley Field. I don't know if you've noticed that, and this could be completely in my head. But I went to a game a couple weeks ago, and I was in a, you know, pretty nice section, and every row had four or five empty seats.
Really?
And I think it's because so many tickets now are corporately owned that it's not the regular guys like you and me who, you know, are shelling out money for tickets, who are going to go. Now they're, you know, I don't know. It just seems
you
to
know,
me,
I had the opposite experience. It was jam-packed.
Yeah.
You know,
I know they're selling the seats. Uh-huh. I just feel like the butts might not be. It just seems to me there are a lot of them. Anyway, I bring that up because you bring about the space and the meeting space.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of business deals done at Wrigley Field or business meetings. Now these people have a place to stay and just walk across the park.
Right, right. So it'll be real convenient. And, you know, if you haven't been to Wrigley Field in a few years and you show up there, you're going to be amazed at the way things in the neighborhood look.
You know,
not only with this hotel, but there's another apartment complex going up. And
they pulled a lot of teeth and they're putting some new stuff
in. The 7-Eleven is gone.
That's
so
not
don't
right.
meet your friends there, because it's not there anymore.
Can't meet at the 7-Eleven, can't meet at the McDonald's, and Gate F is too crowded. Andrew Herman from DNA Info, great to see you again.
Okay.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. So as I said earlier, the Fed is meeting. It's a two-day meeting, starts today, wraps up tomorrow. And after the show tomorrow, about 1 o'clock, 1:15, we will find out whether they will boost the interest rate for the first time in 10 months, only the second time since June of 2006. Greg McBride is a senior analyst for Bankrate.com. He joins us on the Business Lunch from time to time, and this is one of those times. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon.
All right, so the Fed's meeting today. They'll give us their decision tomorrow. And, you know, I guess I hear both things. It seems as if most people expect that there will not be an increase, but there are some who think that there might be some sort of announcement of a rate hike tomorrow. What do you think?
Well, I mean, this one is certainly a closer call than we've had in recent meetings. I still think that they won't raise interest rates, in part because of the fact that there is not this consensus. If the Fed's going to raise interest rates and not undermine the economic recovery, then they need to do a better job of telegraphing that to markets. They didn't do that this time around.
Yeah.
So I think if they did shock everybody or shock most everybody and raise interest rates tomorrow, I think the reaction would be far different than if they had telegraphed it in advance and everybody's expecting a rate hike.
Yeah, I want to
when the Fed puts a rate hike into effect, they want it to be a vote of confidence in the economy. They don't want to undermine the recovery.
I want to get to the sort of box that they've drawn themselves into, but first, this is the next to the last one, essentially, before the election. It seems to me it's pretty rare that they would increase rates this close to a presidential election, right? It doesn't happen that often.
Right. And I mean, that's why they have a November meeting. It comes the week before the election. And that's why everybody has pretty much crossed that one off the calendar, figuring that, less than a week before the election, they certainly won't raise rates. And even now, we're about 7 weeks before the election, as you said, closer than they've been in the past whenever they've made interest rate moves. Not sure that's going to be a huge factor at this point. I think they've got enough soft economic data they can point to over the past couple of weeks, things like retail sales, housing starts, to give themselves cover for holding off at this point.
How relevant are they when it comes to the mood of the consumer? I know there was a bank rate survey recently that they said 61% of the American people think that their greatest fear about the economy is not what the Fed might do, but what the voters might do. I mean, the election and the outcome of that.
Yeah, when we talk about uncertainty, right? I mean, consumers and businesses alike, they hate uncertainty. And when there is any type of uncertainty or anxiety, they tend to tighten the purse strings. And so there's a whole lot of unanswered questions around the election. And, despite the nonstop coverage, those questions aren't being answered, which really, I think, only feeds into that heightened consumer anxiety. So, yeah, more than 60% of Americans say that that's the biggest threat to the economy. A little bit of a change. I mean, earlier this year, back in January, about 40% of Americans said that they weren't concerned about rising interest rates this year. So I think it just goes to show how, what people's source of people's stress and anxiety does, it does ebb and flow over time.
And does that matter? I mean, does it matter what their source of anxiety is when it comes to making decisions about the economy?
Well, from the Fed's perspective,
the consumers drive a lot of the economy, but I don't know if that's relevant.
Well, I mean, there's 70% of economic output is tied to consumer spending. Consumers also have a habit of saying one thing and doing another. But I think what the Fed watches closely to kind of gauge all of that is, the economic data and then also financial markets. Are there signs of tension in financial markets? They don't want to make that problem worse by raising interest rates at a time when it's not expected. We've already seen the dollar strengthen. LIBOR has moved up. There are some other other areas where the cost of money has gone up and kind of done some of the Fed's dirty work for them.
Well, we've been in that quiet period ahead of the meeting for the past several days, but leading up to that quiet period, there was a lot of noise. And I'm no expert in this and haven't followed it all that closely, but it seemed, especially coming up to this meeting, you had one governor saying one thing and indicating this. You had Yellen indicating something else, a third governor indicating maybe a third path. It seemed as if, as you said, signaling forward, there was no clear signal of what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, the lack of consensus or the lack of a clear signal, I think does kind of paint them into a corner in a way. Listen, for the consumer, the takeaway from that is, whether it happens this month or later in the year or in 2017, interest rates are going to go up again. So use this window of opportunity to pay down and refinance out of variable rate debt, refinance out of that adjustable rate mortgage. Grab those 0% credit card offers while you can and use that as a tailwind toward debt repayment. You don't want to be lugging that same debt load into a higher interest rate environment down the road.
All right, so tell me a little bit about, the indications they've given, right? They've got economic standards. They look at sort of benchmarks for statistics that would indicate whether or not they would increase or not increase rates. And as I understand it, the numbers are sort of in conflict from what we expect them to do. Like the numbers indicate that they might raise the rates, and yet we don't expect them to do that. Is that my correct reading?
Well, I mean, there are certain...
Or do I have that backwards, Greg? If I've got it completely backwards, feel free to say so.
No, I mean, there's a couple thresholds that they've put out there in terms of, like, unemployment and wage growth. You know, wage growth had kind of been the laggard. We've seen unemployment come down, and, you know, we're finally seeing that wage growth. So, I mean, you know, you can check both of those boxes off. You know, I do think that, you know, Fed's kind of created a bit of a credibility issue for themselves in the sense that, you know, they put these metrics out there, and yet we're hitting them, and they're still, you know, sort of finding other excuses not to raise interest rates. You know, on the other hand, if they do raise interest rates at this point, well, you know, they're going to unsettle markets because they did such a lousy job of communicating that intent ahead of time. So, you know, I think a lot of this is they've kind of created their own credibility issue. And, you know, to an extent, I think it kind of paints them into a little bit of a corner.
I was going to say they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. But really, that's kind of a sympathetic phrase. And this is one that they've created themselves.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they have. I mean, and they've kind of, you know, jawboned out of both sides of the mouth. And that just, you know, that only sows further uncertainty. It doesn't clear it up, that's for sure.
So when they increased interest rates last December, I mean, that had a negative impact on the world economy, right? And I would imagine that's a concern of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people point to the rate hike, and, you know, I don't know that you can necessarily pin all of it on that. I mean, you know, back in January, markets were in turmoil, but, you know, a lot of that was because of concern about the slowing Chinese economy and what impact that was going to have on the U.S. and the rest of the world. And, you know, you don't hear about that concern anymore, but, you know, I mean, that was really what was at the forefront back in January. So some of that, yeah, might have been the December rate hike, but not all of it. But, yeah, it goes to show that, you know, if the Fed moves at the wrong time or catches markets at the, you know, unaware that, you know, that's the type of volatility that you could see, and it puts the greater economy at risk. Because when people get uncertain, they don't spend money.
Let me, you know, you said that a couple times, and everyone always says that. So let me wrap up by, you know, I hear that businesses like certainty, Wall Street like certainty, but Greg, when has anything ever been certain? I don't quite get that.
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, you sort of the known knowns and the known unknowns, right? I mean, it's the, you know, we, you know, with regard to things like the election where, you know, you are looking at, if you're in business, you know, how is your industry going to be impacted? Are there going to be new regulations? When will they go into effect? How strict will they be? I mean, you know, those are things that have a lot to do with your planning. And you know, and not to mention, I think, sort of economic uncertainty plays a big role, simply because, you know, in times of economic uncertainty, you know, I've seen businesses put off making decisions. I've been in boardrooms where the decision was, let's hold off and see how things shake out. And that's where the economic risk comes into play.
Greg McBride is senior analyst for Bankrate.com. You always make it easier to understand, Greg. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, 12:52 on another beautiful September day. We're in the 80s today and will be tomorrow as well. Shaniqua Davis is in the studio. She is the CEO and founder of Norify. Shaniqua, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, let's start with just a simple, bring the microphone a little close to you. Start with a simple definition. What is Norify?
Norify is a digital referral platform bridging the gap between underrepresented minorities and top-tier companies around the world.
So we hear a lot about, you know, Twitter and Facebook and the fact that they don't have enough minority. Well, they say they don't have enough minority applicants. I don't know if you would agree with that. Are you shaking your head?
Yeah, I completely disagree with that. I believe that the applicants are there. I believe that that the market is just being missed and or looked over, I should say.
Okay, so but they say they want. They say, I mean, obviously the spotlight is on them to increase minority hiring. Are you seeing any increases?
No, I haven't seen any increases in it. And quite frankly, I believe that the current markets or platforms that are set up aren't really targeting that those minorities that need to fill those gaps.
And that's what Norify would do.
Norify is doing that.
How does it work?
So it works is, as if candidates who are looking to join these companies around the world join the platform to create their profiles and display their skills and qualifications, and they connect with peers either locally or around the world or who are part of these companies. People who are part of the company can post internal job offerings at the companies they work for. So Twitter, people who work at Twitter, Facebook, if they know about internal job posting, they'll post it to the network. People at the network are the first to see it. And they jump on the offerings.
So the idea is less that Mark Zuckerberg is going to be looking at NorFi than someone who works for Mark Zuckerberg, a minority who wants to give other minorities a heads up saying, hey, this job's open. Why don't you try to apply for it?
Yes.
And so where are you? Are there other apps out here that compete with you, or how does that work?
Yeah, so right now we are the only one who are providing this level of service. Right now the biggest competitor that I would say would be LinkedIn. However, LinkedIn isn't targeted towards minorities and reaching that niche.
You're just up and running, right? You're just getting started.
Yes.
You've got competition. Is it next week for some funding?
Yes, it's next week.
How does it look? You sort of.
I'm excited.
Are
I'm prepared.
Okay.
Like, I'm ready to bring this to
But
life.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
So how do you prepare for that? First of all, who are you before, and how do you prepare for making your pitch for funding?
Well, I've been speaking with different groups that I'm a part of, preparing and getting their opinion on why they feel like this is necessary, why it's important to them, and then just presenting my solution to them and letting them give me their honest feedback. So really that's how I've been getting it done.
So it's the Fund Conference, is that what it's called?
Yes, the Fund Conference.
And how much cash are you hoping for? All of it.
All of it. I'm hoping to get as much as possible to get the application or the app going, which is set to be launched in January of 2017.
Okay, so, you know, we hear about this. We hear about startups and trying to get funding and all of that. What does it cost to start an app and get going?
Right now, the minimal cost for starting an app is around $50,000.
Is that right?
Yes.
So they always talk about, and this is a minority thing too, right, where they talk about sort of the friends and family fundraising round.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've read about that in the past where, you know, white people developing things tend to have a better network, a wealthier network to raise money.
Yes.
Minorities don't.
Yes, and that's another big issue to bring to light, because we're basically asking people to contribute to this problem, but with, you know, people who aren't in the position to give, it's kind of hard to kind of build on that funding there.
All right, so you're determined. I can see that.
Oh, I'm definitely determined, and I'm definitely excited about helping everyone, you know, get into these companies. And once these people are into these companies, they can bring more people into the company, and we can just continue to build a community.
Where do you expect to be a year from now? Not an hour from now, a year from now.
A year from now, I expect to be the leader in minority development or minority employment across the world.
Where do people get more information?
So people can visit norify.com. That's www.norify.com. Or they can follow us on our social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Norify.
I've been pronouncing it Noirify. It's much harder to say.
Yeah, so just Norify.
Shaniqua Davis, the CEO, thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for
Good having luck me. Next week.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.